Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
They are on an absolute roll right now, and they've rolled all the way into first place in the USL Championship. And coming up toward the end of the show, could promotion and relegation be what saves the USL, that old talking point raised its head again this week with a story in The Athletic. So we will get into promotion relegation. Is it coming to the USL? What would that mean for the league if it does? Coming up in the third segment of today's show. Soccer City, every Thursday, 6 to 7 here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. I'm Jeff Milby. Spencer Brown nervously sweating ahead of the NBA Finals Game 1 tonight between his Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. He's not really sweating. He said his anxiety level is actually kind of low. But that's because he's a Celts fan. He knows they're going to win. And Benton Newman, he's back. A week off for you last week.
I've returned.
We missed you. We're glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back on the mic and talking about Louisville City and racing.
That's exactly what we do every Thursday, 6 to 7 o'clock on these stations, 437-9680. If you want to share your thoughts on your two favorite soccer teams, let's get into it with Racing, Benton, because they are in action first. They lead the weekend off in a doubleheader of home action for soccer fans here in Louisville. Tomorrow night against the Houston Dash. Then Louisville City, by the way, on Saturday night against North Carolina. Back-to-back games at Lynn Family Stadium this weekend for you to look forward to. But let's start with Racing because they play tomorrow night, and it's the first of back-to-back home games for them. They are at home next week as well against Gotham on Saturday in a nationally televised game on ESPN. Coming off of a road win at Chicago in their most recent game, right? They were off this weekend with the international break. Couple of Racing Louisville players saw action during the international break. Linda for South Africa, who has not contributed a ton this year for Racing Louisville, saw action for her nation. And then Millie Clegg, who has not played yet for Racing Louisville, an 18-year-old out of New Zealand, not only played for New Zealand but scored for New Zealand over the weekend against Japan. So a couple of highlights there. Some of the other big international players like Ari Borges, who you'd expect to be in the Brazil team, she's still injured. Uchenna Kanu, Nigeria, didn't have a camp this weekend, so she didn't get to play internationally. Then you have the American contingent, Savannah DeMello on the outside looking in, Taylor Flint for some reason on the outside looking in. We can get into that as well. But a week off for most of the Racing players to recover, to nurse injuries, to get ready for this game, and a big opportunity over the next 2 weeks. They've got momentum, 4 points out of the last two games, both on the road, a point at Kansas City in a 3-3 tie, a 1-0 win at Chicago. You got the week of rest. Does that kill that momentum heading into these two home games? If you're a Racing Louisville fan, you hope not, because if they can beat Houston and beat Gotham at home, that would do a lot to propel them further into this playoff race. They're currently in a playoff spot, we should point out. 8th place in the NWSL. That is the last playoff spot to make it into the postseason. With a lot of soccer to go, we should also point out. But they're right where they want to be at this stage in the season, and over the next 2 weeks, Benton, they have an opportunity to cement that status a little bit further.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about the whole rest element of things. I think that kind of bodes well for them. I mean, they know the magnitude of the games that they have coming up and the opportunities, you know, particularly this one against the Dash. I mean, you got to call it a must win, right? Like, these are the teams that you have to beat if you want to be in the playoff contention. And while they are in playoff contention right now, it is razor thin margins because it is only by way of their +3 goal differential. So it could just take one singular game for them to fall out of reach for them. So, I mean, yeah, that's like the Houston Dash one's very much a must win. And if you really want to prove yourself and put yourself in a more comfortable position, you got to get it done against Gotham, which they nearly did up in New York. So you'd like to think that their chances are pretty decent if the game's being played at home.
Well, nearly did against both of these teams that they're about to face on the road. True. In their previous meetings. It was a scoreless tie at Houston in the second game of the year. a game where Racing really was the better team, dominated the stat sheet, had more chances, more shots. Jane Campbell, the goalkeeper for Houston, made a ton of saves in what's been a fabulous start to the year for her. She got some playing time with the U.S. over the weekend, by the way, so kudos to her. But we'll also point out, Houston's coach today said that his international players have not been able to train with Houston, have not been able to practice with Houston after that international break heading into this game. What kind of factor does that play? Will we see a first-choice Houston team? You pointed out that this is a team Racing should beat in Houston. It's because they're down in 10th place. They're one of the few teams below Racing in the standings. And like I just mentioned, that scoreless tie down in Texas early in the year, I would imagine Racing, if I was in Racing's locker room anyway, I would be hungry to beat that team that I feel like we should have beaten a couple of months ago. You feel like you let them off the hook in that second game of the year. Those are 2 points that you left off the table. Part of the reason you're in eighth place as opposed to sixth, fifth, or fourth place is because you've left points on the table multiple times. Here's an opportunity to remedy that, or at least get a little bit of revenge on one of those games where you dropped points against a team that you were frankly better than in your last meeting. They've got to be confident going into it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of forgot how close that match was until you kind of brought it up and I start going through it again in my head. That was, I mean, yeah, definitely one that they should have won and will definitely be frustrated about. So again, I think that element of revenge or kind of righting the previous wrongs is definitely going to play into it. And again, playing it at home, we got this beautiful weather out here. It seems like the stars are aligned for Racing to really make some positive momentum if they are the team that we believe that they are.
And the team that they, I think, are capable of being.
Absolutely.
Also, not even believe, but just capable of being, given the talent that they have and the ability that they've shown. You mentioned the next week against Gotham. They are up in fifth place, so they're a team that is battling with Racing for one of those final playoff spots. That was a 1-1 tie just a few weeks back up in New Jersey, where Racing led in stoppage time, scored a goal in stoppage time, then gave up a tying goal just a few minutes later with just about the last kick of the ball in that game. So another game where they feel like they dropped some points, where maybe they'll come out with a little bit of edge, a point to prove that, hey, we should have gotten you at your place. We're going to get you at our place. And it's on national TV in a couple of weeks, or a week and a half. A week from Saturday is what it is. A noon kickoff at Lynn Family Stadium on ESPN. So an opportunity for Racing Louisville to show to the sports-watching country that they are a playoff team in the NWSL. A couple of things, or a couple of games coming up for Racing Louisville at home. Let's circle back to the national team conversation and how it kind of plays into Racing Louisville's propulsion over the next couple of weeks. Savannah DeMello, Taylor Flint, two players that I'll point out. On the outside looking in for the U.S. Women's National Team, under a new head coach, by the way, Emma Hayes made her debut over the weekend in these international friendlies for the U.S. Women's National Team. They're building up to the Olympics, which in women's soccer is treated as a major tournament, even with the World Cup. Not the same in the men's game. The World Cup is the tournament. But in the women's game, there are kind of two dual tournaments, the World Cup and the Olympics, both considered on equal footing. Both tournaments you see your top team go. So that's where these American players are right now. They're jockeying for position in the mind of their new head coach, Emma Hayes, that they deserve to be on that plane to Paris in a couple of months' time, in late July, early August is when the Olympics will be taking place. And if I'm Savannah DeMello, and if I'm also particularly Taylor Flint, who has been phenomenal in her first year with Racing Louisville, was named by ESPN as a top 10 MVP candidate a couple of weeks ago, but yet both players not getting looks from Emma Hayes in at least this camp, that would be my personal motivation. You want to be motivated for your team if you're one of these two players for Racing Louisville, saying, hey, we have a chance to move further into the playoff conversation. We get to have a chance to get on a little roll here with a winning streak if we win these next couple of games. But if you're those two players individually, you've also got to come ready to play, ready to perform, ready to score, ready to contribute, because you want to prove to Emma Hayes that you deserve to be on the plane to Paris, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, being on the national team is obviously such a huge deal, and I think it's what they all aspire for. And knowing that they have the talent to be on the team and to be excluded, you got to hope that this was just Emma Hayes kind of experimenting and seeing what she has and and investigating other players. But, It is very disappointing that neither of them were included in the first set of matches, but you can't rule anything out. They just got to focus and control what they can control, and that's their performances, right? And they need to make sure they go out there and put on a heck of a show. And I think that's just extra incentive for them to go out and kind of help their teams contribute in winning in the next two matches. Obviously, I think they're their priority is going to be making sure that the team wins itself.
Absolutely.
But
somewhere in their mind, they have to be thinking about it, right?
Yeah, I think it goes well. It bodes well for racing, the fact that some of your top players have that little bit extra incentive to go about it.
I would think, right? And both players, for what it's worth, have women's national team experience. We all know Savannah DeMello. We talked about it a ton last year. Went to the World Cup, started in the World Cup a couple of times, was one of the contributors to that women's national team that finished so disappointingly in the World Cup. Taylor Flint, with 12 caps with the women's national team prior to that, also a young player in her early 20s. So both players have been in the fold. Both players have worn the red, white, and blue and know what it's like to have that experience. And both, I'm sure, are very hungry to get back to have that experience again, especially DeMello, like I mentioned, a member of the World Cup team last year. She probably somewhere in her psyche still feels the disappointment of that performance from that team and wants to have the opportunity to be a part of the team that redeems themselves this summer in the World Cup. Right now, she looks like she's not going to be a part of it, but she's playing well right now. She's starting to score goals again for Racing Louisville. We've seen some of her best stuff over the last month or so, I'll say, for Racing. Maybe over the next couple of weeks before the next international window, she can talk herself into the conversation like she did last year with the World Cup team by scoring goals and getting on a roll.
The World Cup performance is absolutely looming in her head, and the only way that wrong is ever going to be right is she gets an opportunity to contribute in a meaningful way with the team again, which she'll inevitably, I feel like, get her shot again, whether it'll be this, you know, this upcoming Olympics or remains to be seen. But, you know, I think it's one thing to be trying to earn your way onto the national team for the first time. But after you get those first few caps, after you get that taste of being at that level and participating at it, knowing that you can do it, you get that firsthand experience, it's got to add to the drive that much more for them. You know, they've both been in the mix a little bit, but they want to be involved much more. So, you know, I again, from a Racing Louisville perspective, I really like what that does for the team.
And just on a personal level, international soccer, the national team picture, kind of plays out a little bit like college sports recruiting, because you get phone calls from the coach, you get texts from the coach, you'll be asked to FaceTime or Zoom with the coach periodically leading into an international window. The point I'm making is, if you're Savannah DeMello and you're Taylor Flint, you probably know where you stand in the women's national team picture based on how often the coaching staff for the women's national team is interacting with you, how often they're texting you, how often they're calling you, how often they're checking in. If you have a good performance, you score a goal, your team wins a game, and you played a big role in that, they'll be sending players texts, "Hey, great job today. What a goal you scored. Looking forward to seeing you in camp next time." And if those two players are out of the picture right now, when they're not getting those texts from the national team coach, not getting those phone calls from the national team coach, game after game after game, despite playing well, despite leading their team, despite being among the best midfielders in the league, I think it's safe to say when those two players are at their best, they're among the best midfielders in the league. That's got to motivate you. I mean, on a daily basis, on a day-in, day-out basis, coming to practice, coming to training, coming to work every day, showing up to play games every day, that's got to be a chip on the shoulder for those two players specifically, knowing that there's a new head coach. She evidently doesn't value your performance, doesn't rate your performance highly enough to call you in. I want to prove her wrong, because I know I deserve to be in that camp. I know I deserve to wear the crest of the U.S. over your heart. I know I deserve to be in that group of players, because I know I'm as good as those players. That's got to be the psyche for these two, I would say, over the next couple of weeks.
You bring up a good point, because even if they're not they weren't in this particular camp, you would have to think that any sort of national team, you know, staff worth anything is going to be in contact with any of the players that are even on the fringe as well, and keep them in the loop. So I'd like to think that both Taylor and Sav have kind of gotten some level of feedback from the coach. You know, sure. If I'm the national coach, then you got to keep everybody in the mix. And if there are players who aren't making it, and you have kind of explicit reasons why they're not making it into the fold, you want to give them that feedback so they can improve. I mean, you're the best situation for Emma Hayes would for her to be have a really tough job on her hands trying to parse out these different players. And I think part of that's giving the feedback of what she's not seeing in their game that she would otherwise like to see. So, you know, with that said, thinking about now, I think there's hopefully areas of opportunity they can kind of focus on these upcoming matches to get them in the mix. Well, but we don't know if they've been in contact.
Right. That would be nice. But you hear it all the time in international soccer where players will feel upset that they've not been included in a camp, and they'll come out and speak to the media and say, well, that coach never even talked to me. That coach never reached out to me. That coach didn't even call me and let me know I wasn't going to make it. When they feel like they're right on that bubble, maybe right on that line, they feel like they expect at least a courtesy call of like, hey, well, sorry, we're not going to call you in this time. We really appreciate you. You know, keep your head up, blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't always happen a lot of times.
But if it's a new coach, you would think that you're trying to at least set that foundation, right? Like, you don't know these players. I'm not
the biggest net possible if you're in
right. And I'm not defending any of these coaches who haven't done it, like who have been around there before. But they know who those guys are and probably have given them some level of feedback. You know, for all we know, the player going out there and complaining in the media has been very explicitly told what they need to do. They're just grumpy and mad and disagree about it, right? Like Emma Hayes should ideally again becoming familiar with the entire pool of players that should be available to her, and you would hope that she's not only, you know, working with those directly immediately in her orbit in this first camp, but again, like those players like Taylor and Savannah DeMello, and I'm sure there's a lot of others as well. And you also have to think about some of these younger upcoming players who might not be ready for like to be part of the camps and whatnot. Like she needs to be lay this base.
Let me quickly shift the conversation. Stay with the international soccer conversation coming off the international break and keep it with Racing Louisville as well. But if you're a Racing Louisville fan, I think this is a fair conversation to have. It's not one that I see all that often or hear about all that often, but I think it's a fair conversation to have in the women's game. If you're a Racing Louisville fan, are you maybe secretly hoping that they don't get called in for several reasons? I'll explain. One, the obvious motivational factor. If you don't get called into the national team camp, you're probably coming out with a chip on your shoulder like we've discussed over the last couple of minutes. Two, you don't have to worry about injuries, right? Both Savannah DeMello and Taylor Flynn have had the opportunity to rest over the weekend to, you know, it's been a long season even to this point, but able to nurse whatever little injuries they have, get back to full strength before restarting the regular season this week following a week off, right? And then look, fast forward to the Olympics. If the players aren't called into the Olympic team, they get to stay with Racing Louisville for that entire month, however long the Olympics take. They're not going to be away from their team. They're going to continue to work with their teammates with Racing Louisville. They're going to continue to work under their coaching staff here with Racing Louisville. All I'm saying is there are some benefits from a club perspective if these players are not called up for the national team. Obviously, I think everybody will be happy to see if they were to get called up. I mean, you know, imagine if one of these or both of these players were called into the Olympic team. You get to tune into the opening ceremonies and, hey, those are our players down there walking around with the U.S. national team for all the various sports, the U.S. Olympic team. How cool would that be, right? There are obvious benefits to being called up. But I think if you're a racing fan, maybe selfishly you're kind of secretly hoping they don't get called in. What do you say to that?
I would completely agree with you if it wasn't for the fact that the NWSL has kind of arranged the schedule to minimize the impacts of the Olympics. Otherwise, yeah, I'd say the quiet part out loud. I'd be pretty thrilled to still have them around.
I'm saying
around.
The quiet part out loud. I don't know
about it at all. but the fact that it's like that the NWSL's kind of accounted for that time period in their scheduling kind of minimizes the benefit we otherwise would have of retaining them. So I think I would lean just a little bit more towards letting them have that experience of being in the Olympics, playing at that level, learning to play with other players. I don't think that they need additional time to gel with their team. I mean, obviously the training would help, but I think exposure to something new might be worth a little bit more for them. But if it was like a regular schedule, like each week we're still playing the same, league games. Yeah, I'd absolutely want them around. I would still call Emma Hayes a clown, but I'd also still, in the same other side of my mouth, I would say I'd be pretty thrilled to have both of them.
All I'm saying is if you're a racing fan, just look at last year with Savannah DeMello, goes to the World Cup, comes back, wasn't really the same player, wasn't bad necessarily, but wasn't the same salve that was lighting it up leading into the World Cup.
Correlation,
you know?
Isn't causation,
right,
though. I mean,
right.
It could it very much be the Olympics that kind of contributed to her down performance? Absolutely, it could be.
But also, on the other hand, imagine going to the Olympics, having a great tournament, scoring a couple of goals, being a star player. That's got to propel you, right, confidence-wise, going into the back half of the season. A lot of conversations you could have about that situation with the women's national team, with the Olympics, with international players in the NWSL. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing from a club perspective? I think that is a conversation that could happen ad nauseum in this league, the way
the game
is currently played, and the number of international dates that they have in the women's game as well. They play a ton of international
games. Yeah, the international game has a lot more weight on the women's side than does the men.
Two games coming up for Racing at home, each of them starting tomorrow night, 8 o'clock against the Houston Dash at Lynn Family Stadium, 5-8 in the standings, an opportunity for, eight versus 10 in the standings, I should say, an opportunity for Racing Louisville to get some points, move higher in the playoff standings. Then it's 5-8 the next week. As it stands right now, 5-8 Gotham coming to town at noon on Saturday, June 15th on a game televised on ESPN. So we want to get some fans out there, show the soccer-watching world that there is some serious fan support for this team in that game. Two games to look forward to, racingloufc.com/tickets to get your seats for both of those. Lou City, they're in first place. There's no reason to bumble around and not say it. Let's just come out right out and say it. They're in first place right now. One of the best starts to the season we've seen from a Louisville City team in this, their 10th season. But they've got a home game coming up on Saturday against an opponent that they're not that familiar with over the last few years, North Carolina. We'll get into that on the other side of the break. It's Soccer City here on ESPN Louisville.
You are listening to Soccer City on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, back to the latest on Louisville's professional soccer clubs.
You know, ever since the Super Bowl in L.A. with the Bengals and the halftime performance there, anytime 50 Cent comes on, I just think of him hanging upside down. And, like, nobody getting the reference that was from the music video, but now I just think of him, like, awkwardly, like, hanging there. Oh, good times.
Yeah, indeed. Not so good for the Bengals, though, unfortunately.
Don't remind me. Hey, you know what? I got my night. I never thought Bengals would even be there, so I was just happy. We'll get there, though. Joe's healthy.
Hadn't had a ton of reason to believe in our lifetimes, anyway, that the Bengals could be legit. Tell you what it's good times for right now is Louisville City FC. I am doing something that is very enjoyable as a person that observes Louisville City FC. Frankly, I'm a Louisville City FC fan. I can say that, even though I'm a member of the media, technically, I guess, right? I'm looking at the USL standings here. It's a very enjoyable experience. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10 anybody at this current juncture.
No notes.
To go up that, go pull up that current USL Championship standings page. There at the very top is Louisville City. 29 points in the standings. 9 wins, 1 loss. That was to Charleston and 2 ties. 29 points is 1 point ahead of Charleston for the overall league lead. The best team in the West, for what it's worth, New Mexico, 22 points. So the battle for the regular season title is going to be in the East. It's going to be between Lou City and Charleston. And Charleston, over the last two games, has dropped points. They lost to El Paso on May 24th. They had a scoreless tie at Monterey Bay on May 29th. They didn't play last weekend. They were off last weekend. And so Lou City was able to make up one of those games in hand. They had two games in hand. They'd played two games fewer than the Charleston Battery up to that point. And I kept saying anyway on this show and on the broadcasts of the games, hey, if they win those two games in hand, they have the advantage over Charleston. They'll leapfrog them into first place. If they were able to win those two games in hand and keep pace with Charleston otherwise, they had the advantage. Well, they've taken advantage of that right now, right? They've still got one game in hand, but they've now leapfrogged Charleston into first place by virtue of back-to-back wins against Detroit last Wednesday night, 5-1, and then a 2-1 win on the road at Miami over the weekend in a crazy finish, a crazy game. But they show resilience on the road again, and this time, rather than getting a tie, they come out with 3 points away from home. And it is the culmination of what has been a hugely impressive opening 12 games of the season in the USL Championship regular year for Louisville City. They are dominating teams at home, just crushing teams at home. A plus 22 goal differential at home, and now they are finding ways to get points, get results on the road. Have they been as impressive on the road? No, certainly not. That's the one criticism you can have. We've had it on this show. I've said it a million times now this year, that's the one criticism you can have, is that they're not throttling teams on the road the way they are at home. But you know what? That's to be expected. Going on the road is hard, especially in the USL, where the surfaces, you don't know what surface you're going to play on. Is it artificial turf? Is it a baseball field? Is it how large are the fields? You never know, because there's no regulations like that in soccer in terms of the size of the field. So going on the road's difficult. You got to travel. There's no direct flights out of Louisville, hardly. You got to fly commercial to wherever in the world, take connections, all the rest. Wear and tear on the body, and so Louisville City has found a way, Benton, to go on the road and get results now, and that's the formula for this team, I think, going forward. If they want to pursue that one big title, they haven't won the U.S. Open Cup, but that's not expected. The one big title in the league that they've not won is the regular season title, And they are in prime position to do it this year if they continue to take advantage of their home games, win those comfortably, and grind out results on the road. That's what they've done so far this season.
Yeah, they're controlling what they can control, and they're scooping up as many points as possible. I was never really worried about the standing situation. I always like to look at it at a point-per-game basis. It kind of levels things out and eliminates the whole game-in-hand sort of factor. And, you know, by that measure, Louisville City was always ahead. Now they're, you know, they're sitting comfortably in first place. They're up, what, like plus 6 points on goal differential over Charleston. You got North Carolina coming to town, who has not been super impressive or anything. I mean, life is good for Louisville City right now. I mean, knock on wood, aside from Brian Ombe, you have no other major injuries. So you're keeping a lot of your core players together. And even if an injury were to happen, you got a deep team. You got a deep roster. There's a lot of guys that could start in there. There's guys who were starting last season that are having a hard time even getting on the bench.
That's right. One of those guys has had to start, or started the last game anyway, is Wes Sharpie coming in for Kyle Adams. He's one of the injury concerns right now for Louisville City. Listed as questionable again this week, as is Wilson Harris. Both of those players missed the game at Miami over the weekend. Did not play, were not available for those games, but still listed as questionable. So it's not altogether lost hope that they could play this weekend. And you mentioned it's against North Carolina, a team that they've not seen for a few years, Louisville City. That's because they used to be in the same league. North Carolina FC used to be in the USL Championship back in 2020. We were just talking off air. You remember, and you rightly remembered, that Lou City against North Carolina was the first game of the 2020 season, and then the last game before the pandemic halted the season until July. And that was the last time these two teams met, was way back at the start of the 2020 season, because then the next year, following the pandemic year, North Carolina voluntarily dropped down to the USL League One for seemingly financial reasons. They've been at that league level for a few years now, and then this season decided to return to the USL Championship. So the first time since 2020 that these two are coming together.
Yeah, I have. You've heard this concept of a flashbulb memory, the kind of memory that just really sticks out, a big event. And for me, I have two that were related to COVID. One being, I specifically remember being at World of Beer for that watch party, watching Wake North Carolina, Cameron Lancaster scoring the one goal. Sadly, that ended up being Magnus Rasmussen's last match for the club. That's a name we haven't said in a long time,
that's
is
right.
It? But anyway, no, I mean, yeah, North Carolina is back up now in the championship. First time playing in a while. I mean, at this point, I was going to say they don't scare me, but I just already stopped myself, because what team does scare me? You know, this team is cruising, especially at home.
Oh,
they're just
yeah.
murdering teams.
The only team that shouldn't scare you, but the only team you should be really up for is Charleston right now. Everybody else in the league, you feel like Lou City is at least, I'm not going to say head and shoulders, but at least a head above, especially at home, considering the way that they have just demolished teams at home this year.
If they have just like a decent game, you would expect them to pretty comfortably win.
And honestly, on a bad day, the way Lou City is playing this year, you'd expect them to beat most teams on a bad day. You mentioned Magnus Rasmussen is, in terms of an old-time Louisville City player. I say old-time, it's only a 10-year-old team, right? But a name that we haven't talked about much in the last few years. I'm going to go a little bit further back, because when I think of North Carolina FC, I still think of them as the North Carolina Railhawks.
Ooh, there
remember
we go.
Remember that? From way back in the day, I remember Matt Fondi, who was the original Louisville City star from that 2015 team, won the MVP, set a goal-scoring record with 23 goals, I think it was, at the end of the year. Was one of the reasons that Lou City is successful, I would say, because he kind of put the team on the map by being that star, leading them to being a contender in year one. He left Lou City first for Jacksonville, but then just 2 years after he left Lou City was with the North Carolina Railhawks, who, believe it or not, at that time were considered a bigger team than Louisville City, because they were in the NASL back in the day, which was considered the second division to the USL's third division. What a weird world that is, to imagine a player leaving Louisville City and thinking that it is a step up to go to North Carolina. But that was the world we were living in back in 2016 and 2017.
The soccer landscape sure was different. I'm now reminiscing on all these old teams, you know, the Rhinos, Harris City Islanders.
Yeah. Harrisburg City, wasn't
that's
it?
That's it. So I knew
City.
Something goofy like that. The Jacksonville Armada, yeah, all these old teams that were relevant and are no longer. That's the lower league landscape. But, you know, we weren't the big dogs then, but since then we've put two stars above the crest. And man, I don't hate to get ahead of myself, but they seem to be putting themselves in a good position to maybe get a third.
Maybe get a third. It's feeling that way. There's no reason not to be that confident right now, because this team has been so darn good. You mentioned the goal scoring, or at least I talked about the goal differential at home. Lou City right now is on pace. If they can maintain their goal scoring pace, they're on pace to be the highest scoring team in USL history. Right now, they're just a couple of clicks above the 2019 Phoenix Rising team that scored 89 goals over the course of the year. Lou City so far through 12 games, 35 goals. That's 2.9 goals per game. That Phoenix team from 2019, 2.7 goals per game. So right now, Lou City could be the highest scoring team ever in USL Championship history if they just keep the pace that they're on. And in a game on Saturday against North Carolina at Lynn Family Stadium, there's no reason to doubt that they can't put up another crazy goal total. We mentioned a 5-1 win over Detroit, a playoff team, last Wednesday night at home. They have just demolished teams at home. I'll say it again, demolished teams at home by multiple goals time and time and time again. Even when they have a less than stellar performance against, say, Orange County, they're able to beat them 3-0. And it's a comfortable win. Any other year, last year, we were praying for a 3-0 win at home. We were to walk through glass for a 3-0 win at home. This year, a 3-0 win at home seems, well, hey, it wasn't their best night. But that's the kind of team that this team has been. And you would expect against North Carolina. They're in eighth place right now in the Eastern Conference. That is a playoff spot out of the 12 teams in the East. I'll say it again like I say every week. Too many teams make the playoffs in the USL. But eighth place out of 12 teams in the East. 14 points in the standings for North Carolina. 3 wins, 4 losses, and 5 ties for them. They're going to be a heavy underdog. I don't know, you pay attention to the odds a little bit more than I do in terms of who's the favorite on a week-by-week basis, Benton. I would imagine that Lou City is a plus 150 favorite, a plus 200 favorite. I'm not exactly an odds maker, but it's got to be something like that. The way that they're playing at home, who's betting against this team?
It'd be minus.
Especially against North Carolina.
You got it right, and I don't even have to look to know that they're going to be the favorites in this one. I mean, I'm just calling the Railhawks. North Carolina FC.
What is a Railhawk? I have no idea.
I don't know, and I don't care. It's a fun sounding name. Bring back the old names. But they're just okay. You know, it's hard going up from one league to another because your base and a lot of these situations, you're basically totally redoing your roster, which means there's a lot of chemistry gone. Getting new things together, you're still kind of figuring things out. It's not as cut and dry as just, oh, you're just playing a different set of opponents. Like, you're reworking your roster and whatnot. And speaking of roster, you know who's on the roster now?
I was about to go there myself. You read my mind. Go ahead. Tell the people.
One Mr. Paco Craig.
That's
which
right.
He was the one factor that made playing Miami interesting. He's no longer with Miami, but he's now with North Carolina. So that adds a fun, interesting factor. Because even outside of his time with Louisville City, he's been a top defender in the league.
Here's the roster as a whole for North Carolina is not without threat. I'll say that.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Like you mentioned, Paco Craig, former Lou City guy, Ja'Cory Hayes is on the roster. He played with Minnesota United in MLS for quite a while. Was a member of San Antonio's team last year. A notable name at this level. Evan Conway, a forward, played with San Diego the last couple of years. Multiple games for them, scored lots of goals for them.
Colin Martin, who's been a very solid midfielder, who was also from San Diego.
Rodrigo Da Costa, who is the all-time leading goal scorer for Tulsa, went to Memphis last year, remember, in that big deal for Philip Goodrum. Well, he signed in the offseason with North Carolina. So they've got some names on their team. They've got some guys that are dangerous, but evidently just not clicking on the right level to this point this season. And again, we'll be a heavy underdog coming into this game. They are, for what it's worth, the defending champs of USL League One, where they were last year, down a league from the USL Championship. They won it in the playoffs after finishing in second place in the regular season. So in some ways, they kind of promoted themselves. We're going to get into Pro Rel in a minute. I'll explain why. But
you know, winning another league trophy and like trying to compare it here, you know, that's like your... It's like your JV trophy, just like I was dunking on Detroit for keeping their star from their like NASL days or NISA or whatever dumb league that they were in before the USL. Credit to them for winning that one, but it's a whole different ball game, and you got to think their roster's turned over a lot because a lot of those names we just listed. You know, we can go back and tell you the teams they were on last year. You know, it's a whole new squad, whole different team.
One other thing I'll say on the thought of North Carolina, a couple of things, actually. This is one of the other organizations that is comparable to Soccer Holdings, because they are the only other team that I'm aware of, the only other organization that is a USL team paired with an NWSL team. Every other NWSL team is paired with an MLS team, or they play in the same stadium as an MLS team, or they play in the same city as an MLS team. This is the only one where it's a sister club relationship between a USL team and an NWSL team. That's interesting, right? Just one little tidbit. And here's another thing, and this is a little bit of a personal gripe for me. They play at Wake Med Soccer Park, North Carolina. It's a fine stadium, capacity 10,000. It's hosted the NCAA championship multiple times over the years. It's hosted many training camps for the national teams, both men and women, over the years. But it's also hosted recently national team games. And I don't understand why, because I've never been there, but it looks like a dump on TV. It does not look like a nice stadium. It looks like a dump. And yet, as recently as 2018, they were hosting women's national team friendlies and men's national team friendlies. And yet, Lynn Family Stadium has not been in that conversation yet. I remember about a year ago, I put it out on Twitter. Hey, why doesn't Lynn Family Stadium host a national team game? I'm not saying a big one, but one of these off-window friendlies, not in a competition, but a friendly against name a team in the middle of October or December or whenever. November, I guess, more likely than December. Hosted at Lynn Family Stadium. If they're hosting games at Wake Med Soccer Park, which is, I'll say it again, a dump as recently as 2018, you got to come here, right? At some point.
I mean, the best excuse that I can come up with, and I'm not saying I agree with it, the best excuse I can think of is back when they were getting those games, soccer wasn't as big. Like, and just in the past few years, it's really, really gained some momentum in this country. And you got to think that they're only going to be playing at the bigger venues. But to your point,
2018's not that long ago, and they were playing a game there for both the men and the women for the U.S. national team.
I mean, I agree, but like, we didn't have that stadium then, and you know, maybe things would have been different. And I think that just the growth of the game has been that quick, that rapid, where they know they can fill bigger and better stadiums. But, I mean, to your point, Lynn Family Stadium is a much better venue. Yeah, unquestionably. Put the two together, which one are you going to pick looks better? Louisville City.
Louisville City is going to be in first place when they start this game on Saturday night, because Charleston didn't play in the midweek. So they will be in first place by one game. It's Saturday night at Lynn Family Stadium, 8 o'clock against North Carolina. Back-to-back nights of soccer for you to enjoy at home this weekend. Your sports weekend has already started. How about that? Tomorrow night, racing at home against Houston. Saturday night, Lou City at home against North Carolina. Those games. Get your tickets. You want to come out and support these teams. If you're not going to WWE and UFC this weekend, come to Lynn Family Stadium. Looking at somebody across the table from me who's sitting behind a microphone right now. Just kidding, Ben. I'm just teasing. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to bring up one of those age-old topics in American soccer. If you've been a soccer fan for more than 6 months, you've probably had this debate or read somebody's debate in the comments section of a YouTube video or on Reddit or just on plain old regular Twitter. Promotion and relegation. Why am I bringing it up? There was a story in The Athletic this week about it, potentially coming to the USL. So we will talk about that when we come back. Text your thoughts, 437-9680. Promotion, relegation, here on Soccer City.
You're locked on Soccer City, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, back to the latest on Louisville's professional soccer clubs.
Louisville's professional soccer clubs is what we talk about on this show. But we're going to generalize it a little bit for this last segment. Not just Louisville, but all of American soccer. Because there was a story came out in The Athletic this week. Jeff Reuter wrote it. He is seemingly the insider when it comes to USL-related news. Any big news on the USL front, he's the guy that typically breaks it. He's got all the inside sources across the country. He wrote a story May 29th, it was. So what's that, maybe a little bit over a week ago now? About promotion and relegation coming to the USL. Not just, obviously, the USL Championship, but the leagues below it. USL League 1, USL League 2. Could it happen? Does the league want it to happen? And how it almost happened. Remember a year ago, last July, almost a year ago, last July, we talked about it on this show a little bit. There was a big story, I think The Athletic broke it, that the league was planning on voting to implement promotion and relegation in their July league meeting that they have every season. When all the owners and executives get together and talk about the future of the league, talk about the plans that they wanted. Last year, there was a report that they were going to vote on it, and seemingly, according to Jeff Reuter's reporting, they were going to vote on it until they didn't. After they got together, the owners and executives, there were a lot of questions kind of revolving around how would this be implemented, what would it look like, how soon would it be implemented. Owners and executives weren't ready to commit to a vote at that moment, so they tabled it for the future. There's no vote impending, but it still seems like the league wants to implement promotion and relegation within itself. This wouldn't include Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer is, you know, separate from this organization. Maybe the thinking is if the USL instituted Pro Rel, that would put pressure on MLS to include them in a promotion relegation system. I say fat chance of that. But even without MLS, let's imagine that the USL does institute promotion relegation at some point in the near future. When I say near future, I'm talking 5, 6, 7 years down the road, because I feel like even if they voted on it today, they would probably kick the can down the road at least that far along to continue to get their infrastructure built under them and around them. But even without MLS, imagine a world where they institute promotion relegation. Does that make the USL more interesting, more entertaining, and more fun, Benton? What do you say?
The USL needs something to really separate themselves from the MLS, to kind of find their niche, other than being, you know, the division below that. And I think Pro Rel is probably their biggest opportunity to do that, right? They get to more closely mirror the system that the rest of the world uses, and they add something that is unique to the sporting landscape that's not offered. Like you said before, MLS is not going to do any sort of Pro Rel. If they do, it will be their own sort of internal thing. And
I think the most likely route for that, but just quickly for MLS, is if they expand to like 40 markets, which is possible. It seems like every city wants to get a piece of MLS right now, even though it costs $500 million, $500 million to get into the league. That's the expansion fee these days. But it seems like lots of cities want to get in. I mean, Indianapolis, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, is now lining up to get a Major League Soccer bid for their stadium that was previously going to be built for the Indy 11, now seemingly being built for an MLS team. So my thinking is MLS maybe one day, if they get to, say, 40 teams, would split into two 20-team divisions and institute Pro Rel within their own league. But the USL's kind of trying to do that on their own right now, on their side of things, within their league, have Pro Rel. And if they did it, according to Jeff Reuter and according to The Athletic, they would add a third league. So it would be the USL Championship, USL League One, which is the second pro league in the USL. Currently, League Two is an amateur league. It's basically like collegiate summer baseball, where college players play for these teams in the summertime and then go back to their colleges, right? That league, too, would be professionalized and turned into a fully professional league, and you would have three leagues in the USL with promotion and relegation between them. That's the plan, if and when they come around to implementing it, according to The Athletic.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it'd be good, right? There's a lot of soccer purists out there that want to see more of that replication like happening. That's going to appeal to those fan base. Like I said, it kind of differentiates from the MLS, like gives them something to like hang on to other than being the not MLS option in terms of soccer. And, you know, the cool thing about the Pro Rel situation is the incentive that it provides for teams that aren't doing well in their respective leagues, right? What right now, what is the repercussion for a team just being absolute garbage in the USL Championship?
I mean,
there's none. Like, yeah. It's just like, oh, it's a wash season. We'll try again next year.
Well, the punishment, the detriment of being a bad team in the USL Championship is potentially folding, I would say, right? Because if you're on the bottom end of the standings,
I'm thinking
people aren't coming to your games. I mean, we just saw Lou City go to Miami, and I'm not kidding when I say that there were dozens of people in the stands against Miami FC. Not Inter Miami of MLS, Miami of USL. There couldn't have been 500 people at this game. It had to be less. And according to the broadcast, many of them were Louisville fans that traveled south to go, you know, enjoy South Beach and see the game. That's one example. They've got a billionaire owner that's keeping them afloat. Some other teams don't. And if they're at the wrong end of the standings, maybe irrelevance and therefore non-existence is what is the threat for them. But I hear what you're saying, because if you're just in last place, there's no real threat to go you know, anything impending. You're going to be in the same league next year. If you figure it out, get it right, sign some good players in the offseason, maybe make the right coaching hire, you believe that you can be right back among the elite in your league. Not the case if it's promotion
right.
or relegation.
Yeah, and I mean, and it goes beyond the whole money thing, just the general interest of the sport itself and, like, hang on to. Like, what if Louisville City was just absolute garbage next year? Not going to happen, but what if they were? Like, you would just there would be people that stop tuning in because they're bad, but the people who really, like, who are big fans, like, that would give them more incentive to continue watching, because even they might check out if there's, like, no real incentive to continue watching. And it's a weird foreign thing for people who are only familiar with, like, traditional American sports, because there's nothing else really like that.
In
the sporting world. So it's really hard. It's really hard to compare what that feeling is to anybody else. I mean, go look up on YouTube any sort of team that wins, like, a promotion, like,
or even teams that just stay up, teams that win a relegation battle.
They win their relegation battle and kind of escape the drop.
I think back to Everton. I think it was 2 years ago. They stormed the field when they secured that they were going to stay in the league.
It's like winning a championship.
It had to be like one of the great moments for them in recent memory. But they were one of the worst teams in the league. You know, but just they were a losing team, but they managed to escape relegation. And the game that they did it, the fans stormed the field because it means that much to them. Right now in the USL, across the divisions, Championship and League One, I'm not counting League Two yet because, again, they're amateur. Mm-hmm. Right now between League One or Championship and League One, there are 36 teams. And are a lot more teams coming into the league. Expansion has been rampant in the USL. Buffalo talking about coming into the league. Brooklyn coming into the league. Arkansas coming into the league. Jacksonville coming into the league among the teams. Milwaukee coming into the league.
New Orleans.
New Orleans as well coming into the league over the next few years. Now, we'll see when those teams actually formulate right. Sometimes they announce and then it takes 2, 3, 4 years for them to actually get a team together and get their stadium right and figure out what they're going to do and field a team in the league, but all of those markets are at least interested in having a USL team, not an MLS team, a USL team. So if you get enough teams and enough markets that are interested in this league, I think it's feasible. If you, say, get up to maybe 40, 45 teams, you could split into three divisions, have, I don't know, 20 teams in the championship, and then split the remaining number between the second and third division in the USL. It would make it interesting to see, is all I'm saying. It would be very interesting to see it unfold, develop. Does it generate interest in the lower leagues when they're in a promotion battle? Let's say you're in League One and it's late in the season and you're in the playoffs, and if you win the playoffs, you have an opportunity to go up to the USL Championship. Does that build interest in some of these smaller markets, like, say, Chattanooga, like Lexington? They've got a team in USL League One. Imagine if Lexington won a promotion battle to come up to the championship. That would be fun, giving Louisville a natural rival in league play a couple of times a year in the regular season. These are the kinds of storylines and scenarios that can develop if this is a plan that ultimately gets implemented. The question becomes, though, when do they implement it? Again, there's no reports of any impending vote. The Athletic didn't say, hey, they're going to vote on it this summer in the league meetings. Jeff Reuter was just looking back at last year, and it sounds like there were some business people, who got a little bit queasy at the idea of their investment being devalued because their team sucks. That's more or less what tabled the vote last year. And that's going to be a hurdle that they're going to have to overcome no matter when this vote comes up.
Yeah, I mean, I think conceptually most people are probably on board with it, but I also don't fault the teams for maybe wanting a little bit more details or a fleshed out idea to kind of see what that would look like. You know, how much risk would they be taking on? I mean, that's a completely fair concern for those owners and whatnot to have with their investment. But also there's that added value, again, of this whole unique element that would come to the table with promotion relegation. You know, not only the going up and down, but like a team like Louisville City, who had expected to remain in the top division, like the landscape is going to be would change each and every year. You get different opponents. Different styles, different coaches and whatnot. It keeps it fresh rather than the only changes happening being the the closure, the shuttering of the doors of some clubs.
And we forgot to mention Iowa also. Des Moines, Iowa, a couple of years ago, it was 2022 when this article that I'm looking at was written, had reached a deal with the USL to get a team there whenever they get their ownership together. Just another, you know, fun market to go to. Imagine a road trip to Milwaukee or a road trip to Brooklyn if you wanted to make that trip up there. Jacksonville, Florida, another fun road trip.
Isn't Oklahoma City Energy supposed to be coming back too?
Oh, I think they are.
I forgot about them.
You're right, yeah. We'll see what happens there. But just point blank, if you were one of these owners in the meeting, Let's imagine you were you had a piece of Louisville City, and John Neese said, "Here, Benton, you take our vote and head to this league meeting in the summer." What would you vote? Yes or no in terms of pro rel as a Louisville City person? Because let's face it, unless the floor falls out from under Louisville City, they're probably never going to risk relegation, at least not in the next few years, right, the way things are going right now. But what would you say if you were the Louisville representative at the USL League meetings this summer and a pro rel vote came up?
I think you only stand to gain, right? Because if I'm running the show, you're going to pump all the resources you need to ensure that this club is successful. There's too much money invested in Butchertown for it not to be. So, I'm voting yes because, again, I think it really just adds to what the league is and what the league wants to become. Is an alternative to MLS in terms of soccer in America. I don't see any other big way that you could kind of
differentiate yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Make a mark in the position that you're in. So, yeah, I'm not fearing going down. Go for it. I'm signing off.
In the past, I have been critical of pro rel because there are some people on soccer Twitter specifically that are so crazy about it that they make the conversation not fun to have because they think
it's a little cringy.
They think it's the thing that will save American soccer. They think that we'll win the World Cup the moment that they implement pro rel in the U.S. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen as a result immediately of pro rel being implemented. But it would be more fun. I'll say that. It would make the league way more interesting. You would care more, even as a neutral, you would say, oh, who won that game late in the season between the two last place teams? Because it matters a little bit more. It's not just a battle for last place. It's suddenly a battle to stay in the league.
Maybe I'm a Pierce myself, but I think it's part of the sport itself is the structure of it and having pro rel, and to me, is part of that. So I would like to see that happen. Do I think it's going to make all those magnitude of changes you just listed? No, but it adds something different and fun that other sports don't have, and I would love to see it.
Just imagine if Kentucky football one year when they went 2-10, back when they were doing that 10 years ago, imagine if they had gotten relegated to Conference USA.
And then we get to hoist that Conference USA trophy and go back to the SEC.
That's right. That's right. I think that's honestly the best comparison is college football because there are so many teams across the country, regional leagues. I think if I were the commissioner of sports, if I were the sports czar of America, I would make it happen in college football.
Czar, that's a good word.
Yeah. Two games this weekend. Your weekend starting already. Racing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock against Houston. Lou City Saturday night at 8 o'clock against North Carolina. Get your tickets. Soccer City every Thursday.
Vamos Marauders.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.